Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiowitz, and today we'll be studying Parshat Chukat. One of the things that I find so interesting in the Torah is how the Torah chooses to use its words and how to spend its time. For example, in Sefer Shmot, the first perek of the Sefer tells us about many years of slavery condensed into only a number of psukim. Then what follows is a very detailed description of Moshe's early life, and then we skip about 60 years until Moshe finds himself at the burning bush at age 80. What happened to those lost years? Where was Moshe? And this is something the gaps and the honing in and spending time on very specific details is a pattern that we see throughout the Torah. It's actually a literary tool that the Torah uses. So we find a similarly intriguing gap in Parshat Chukat. Once we reach Perek Chaf of Parsha Chukat, we suddenly find ourselves transported to the 40th year of the journey of Bnei Israel in the desert. And in that very chapter, we begin with the story of the death of Miriam. We close with the death of Aaron. In the middle of this Perek, Moshe and Aaron are both decreed that they will die and not bring the people into Israel. And we know that Moshe will die later this year in the 40th year of the desert. Now, if we go back to the beginning of our journey in Sefer Bamidbar, all the other events have taken place in the second year of the people's time in the desert. We began in Iyar with the preparation to enter into Israel, with the counting of Bnei Israel, the counting of the Levim, the setting up the camp around the Mishkan, the preparation of the camp as a holy sanctified place, the Pesach Sheni, and the beginning of Bnei Israel's travels. Then, once we reached Perek Yud Aleph, we hit roadblocks, and we have a slew of sins and obstacles and complaints. Mitonanim, Tav'era, the Meraglim, the spies, Korach. All of these stories are presented in successive narratives, and they all take place in the second year. Now, abruptly, we suddenly find ourselves in the 40th year. What happened in the interim, and why gloss over these 37 years? So the opening of Parshat Chukat gives us a clue. The word chok means a law that's difficult to understand. And the law that's told here is the law of the Parah Aduma, the red calf, which through a process the Kohen uses to purify someone who has become impure through contact with the dead body. And I think there are three different ways that these laws, the law of the Parah Aduma, reflects these missing 37 years, what happened in the 37 years and their implication. So first of all, this idea of the transition from the impure to the pure is exactly what was happening here. We were transitioning from the first generation, that generation of the people who left Egypt. They were decreed in Parshat Shlach that they will die out and their children will be the ones that will enter into Israel. So what's happening here is this transition from the impurity or the stage that's frozen, that's not able to move forward, and a transition to a new generation that will be able to do that. Secondly, Rav Soloveitchik said that the ultimate chok that's discussed here is the chok of Adam ki yamut ba'ohel. It says, this is in describing the laws, it says a person who will dies in the tent, and Rav Soloveitchik comments, this is the chok, this is the real thing we don't understand. The thing that we don't understand is death itself. And this is what was happening over those missing 37 plus years. Over those years, people were dying as they transitioned out, as we were getting ourselves ready for this new generation. And this aspect also focuses in on what was happening. And the third piece of Parah Aduma that reflects what's happening here is this idea that in the process of Parah Aduma is that the person who does the purification, the Kohen who does the purification, becomes impure himself through the process. And that's actually what happened here as well with the leaders, Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe. Through their leadership and through their ties to this community, they themselves became, so to speak, tamei. And I would say in two ways. First of all, the Midrash says that another reason why we have no recordings, but Moshe did not receive any nevuah during this time period, during these 37 years. And that was reflected in the stagnancy and the lack of hope that characterized that generation and this ending. But even more strikingly, all these leaders, Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron, will not enter into Israel. They're tied to this community. And I'm not going to speak about in this podcast why and, you know, why, well, how did that happen? I think it's a really important topic. I'm just going to focus more on the people. But in this point, Para Aduma, the idea that the leader, the person doing the Tahara, becomes themselves impure through the process, and that's an inevitable outcome of leadership, is also something that comes out from the Para Aduma story. So now, following Para Aduma, the next thing that we have is we meet this new generation for the first time, and we find ourselves as readers very excited. After all the horror and tragedy of the deaths of the first generation, here is a new growth, new life. What will they be like? And we're told three stories about this new generation. The first story is the famous story of Mei Meriva, and it's famous really for Moshe hitting the rock, which leads to his loss of the ability to enter into Israel. But before that, I want to just focus on what happened with the people in our attempt to try to understand who is this new generation. And the very first words we hear about this new generation is Vayarev Ha'am im Moshe. The nation fought with Moshe. And they turn to Moshe and they say, why are we don't have any water. The Midrash says that's because they lost the Be'er, the well that they had in Miriam's Chut. And they turn to Moshe and they say, why should we die in this desert, right? Why did you take us out of Egypt to just die in this terrible, desolate, barren place? It's not a place of seeds and growing and rimon, pomegranates and fruits, and there's no water. So let me just highlight for a minute how disappointing this is. We're so excited to meet this new generation ready for this new chapter in the lives of Bnei Israel. And the first thing we hear about them is that they're kind of similar to the last generation. And certainly Moshe feels this as well when he goes with his staff to bring water out of the rock. And Moshe says, Shimuna Hamorim, listen, you rebellious people. And Moshe hits the rock, and we all know how that story ends. And the next story follows really in some ways a very similar vein. After Moshe receives his decree and Aaron dies, then Moshe really, and I must highlight like to his amazing his credit, his chut, that he doesn't miss a step. He's ready to help bring these people in. And he approaches Edom, which is the natural place, the shortest route for the people to enter into Israel, and asks to go through their land. This request is rejected, and the nation needs to pull back. Now, following this pullback, the nation becomes frustrated again. And it says, Vayedaber ha'am be'elokim u'b'moshe. They speak against God and Moshe. And once again, they say, why did you take us out of Egypt to die in the desert? We have no food, we have no water, and we're tired of this disgusting bread, this spoiled bread. And really what they're referring to here is the man. Now this time, as opposed to Mei Meriva, Hashem responds with the punishment, and he sends snakes that bite the people, and many people die. The people turn to Moshe and they say, Chatanu, we did wrong, we sinned, because we spoke against you and Hashem. Please daven to Hashem to get to forgive us. Moshe does that. He davens to Hashem. He also makes the copper serpent, which has now become kind of the medical symbol of healing. And when people look at this copper serpent, they're healed. The last story that we have in this parsha is the story of Sichon. Once they're not able to enter into the shortest route, the people choose, they realize the next route is they have to go through the Emori. So Bnei Israel send messengers to Sichon, the king of the Emori, asking to go through peacefully, to go through his borders. Sichon says no, they fight a war against Sichon, and they're successful. Now, looking back at after meeting this new generation and reading these three stories, I think the question, I want to start with that question that we started with, which is this generation really different? Now, on the one hand, yes, they are. And I want to point out four ways that they're different. First of all, they fight their own wars. Second of all, they take ownership. They're independent. And there's even a transition in this parsha itself. When Moshe approaches Edom, He's the one who does the negotiating. By the time they approach Sihon, it's Bnei Yisrael who send the messengers and do the negotiations. So there's a transition here to independence and even more independence from the beginning of the parsha. Thirdly, they daven. When they did wrong and Hashem sends the snakes, the first thing they do is they turn to Moshe and they say, okay, Moshe, we get it. Daven for us. Try to give us forgiveness. And then fourthly, even in looking at their complaints all focus on their impatience to enter into Israel. Never do they say, like generation number one, bring us back to Egypt. It was better for us there. Why did we ever leave? Instead of that fear and that frozenness that the first generation is really characterized by, that wanting to regress, this generation has a different character. This generation is impatient. They want to go into Israel. They highlight the fruits that they're excited to eat in Israel. They no longer want the man because they're ready for that natural existence. That's really the next step for them. And they complain because once they see themselves regressing and having to turn back and not going in right away, they want to be in now. But on the other hand, are they really different? Yes, this nation doesn't mention Egypt, but they never lived in Egypt. So they're not going to complain about something that they never experienced. And does that make these complaints any better? They're still crying in the same way. They use many of the same words, and they still seem to be rejecting Moshe, their leader, and ultimately rejecting Hashem. So maybe this generation is really not that much better. And they get in really just because that was the promise that Hashem made. Hashem promised in year number two that the first generation would not enter, but he did promise unconditionally that their children would. And they enter because that's what Hashem promised. So maybe this generation is not fundamentally different than the generation before. And I think actually that the truth probably lies somewhere between those two perspectives. Right? On the one hand, generation number two is different than the first generation. There is progress. There is more of a connection to Hashem. There is more independence. And they do seem to desire going into Israel. But on the other hand, they also do make many of the same mistakes that the first generation does. They quickly fall into complaining. And while a desire to enter into Israel is certainly a laudable thing and something that we would want to see from this generation, on the other hand, there are other ways for them to respond to difficult situations. And they seem to be still falling back on the habits of the first generation, the habits that ultimately prevented them from entering. And I think that the reason the Torah shares all these stories with us and doesn't tie this up with a bow that, you know, generation two is fundamentally different is because the Torah is teaching us something very important, which is that growth is not linear. And very often we want from ourselves and from others, we expect to see a linear passage of growth, a fast trajectory, a leaving of the problems of one generation without seeing any of them recur into the next generation. But that's not really what happens. And the Torah gives us a very realistic model of human nature. It's a model of growth, but it's a model of growth that takes two steps forward, one step back, but always moving forward, trying to reconnect, trying to rebuild relationships with Hashem, with our leaders, and with the people around us. Thank you for learning Parshat Chukah with the OU Women's Initiative. I look forward to learning with you next week.